Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Government Refunds and Taxpayer Equality Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 4, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Armour v. Indianapolis, a case involving municipal assignments for a sewer improvement project. The question presented in this case was whether a local government violated the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause when it forgave the obligations of taxpayers who had elected to pay on a multi-year installment plan but refused to refund lump sum payments made by similarly situated taxpayers who had paid their assessments up front and in full. In an opinion delivered by Justice Breyer, the court held by a vote of 6-3 that the government did not violate the Equal Protection Clause when it refused to refund any of the lump sum payments because the government had a rational basis for distinguishing between the lump sum and installment plan groups. Justices Kennedy, Thomas, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined Justice Breyer's opinion. Chief Justice Roberts filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justices Scalia and Alito. To discuss the case, we have David Bernstein, who is the George Mason University Foundation Professor at George Mason University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Bernstein.
So I'm here today to talk about Armour versus City of Indianapolis. This case involved an Indianapolis law called the Barrett Law. The Barrett Law permitted cities to apportion a public improvement project's cost equally among all the abutting lots in the given neighborhood that was benefiting from that project. So the city would create an initial assessment, say $100,000, and if there were, say, 20 lots that were benefiting from the project, they would each get charged $5,000, dividing the total estimated cost, obviously, by the number of lots. The city, once the project was completed, would issue an assessment. Lot owners could pay the assessment either in a lump sum or over time in installments with interest. So this particular case involves a particular project called the Brisbane Manning Sanitary Sewers Project, which was encouraging homeowners to replace their old septic systems with sewer systems. And in one particular neighborhood, the city decided it was going to replace the septic systems with sewers, and they sent an assessment to the affected homeowners. 180 homeowners were affected. They each got billed almost $10,000. Of those 180 affected homeowners, 38 paid the sum in one lump sum. Then the city decided that it was going to change the way it financed these projects. It decided, apparently, that there was too much political opposition from local residents to paying such large sums, $10,000 for a project for a house that might only be worth $100,000 or $200,000 in a modest neighborhood. So they passed a new law that said that from now on, we're just going to charge each homeowner a lump sum of $2,500 for any kind of sewer improvement projects, and any additional funds will be taken from general bond revenues. As part of this new law, it gave the city permission, authority, to forgive any outstanding debts under the old Barrett Law. So for this Brisbane Manning Sanitary Sewer Project we're referring to, with the 180 homeowners, the city decided to forgive the debts of all the homeowners who hadn't paid in full. The project had only started a year or so earlier, so while 38 homeowners had paid a full $9,700-plus, the other 142 homeowners had paid anywhere from $300-something dollars to about $1,000. The homeowners who had paid a lump sum said, hey, this isn't fair. We paid $9,700. We paid at least 10 times as much as our neighbors for the same exact service. We want our money back. And the city said, no, it would be too much of a hassle to give you your money back. Plus, there are 23 other projects like this that were ongoing. We may have to give everyone else who's paid a lump sum their money back, so we don't want to do it. So the homeowners turned around and sued. 31 of the 38 sued. And they won in Indiana lower courts. They lost at the Indiana Supreme Court, and then they appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court heard the case under the Equal Protection Clause with the argument that the law violate the Equal Protection Clause by treating certain taxpayers in an extremely arbitrary, disparate manner from other taxpayers. Now, of course, since the 1930s, the Supreme Court has adopted an extremely liberal and forgiving view of what constitutes a violation of equal protection when no fundamental right is involved and when no suspect classes are involved. And the court went along with that very liberal interpretation here, and in a 6-3 decision, they held that the government's refusal to somehow redress the homeowners who had paid the full sum did not violate the Equal Protection Clause. Justice Breyer wrote the opinion for the 6-justice majority, which included the 4 liberal justices plus Justice Kennedy and Justice Thomas. The majority concluded that because there were some reasonably conceivable state of facts that could provide a rational basis for the classification, which is language taken from Justice Thomas's opinion, FCC versus Beach Communications, that the failure to make the taxes equal did not violate equal protection. The court pointed out that cities and other jurisdictions in the United States often treat people somewhat differently, either for administrative convenience or because they want to encourage certain behavior. For example, sometimes you'll have parking ticket amnesties or tax amnesties. And I think part of the problem here, even though the court didn't say this specifically, is that one remedy that would have survived equal protection, even under the plaintiff's argument, was that the city could have refused to have written off the debts of the other homeowners. So in other words, some homeowners paid $9,700, some had paid close to nothing. The city could have said, okay, everyone has to pay the full $9,700, even if in installments. And I think courts are generally reluctant to find a violation where the possible remedy is simply that the plaintiffs don't really get anything, but they punish somebody else or somebody else gets harmed. It reminds me a little bit of an obscure old case from 1899 called Cumming versus Richmond, Kentucky Board of Education, where some black plaintiffs had sued because the city had closed down the all-black high school but had left open the all-white high school, and the court upheld the city's decision to do that in part because the black plaintiffs didn't ask that their high school be reopened. They asked that the white high school be closed down. And Justice Harlan, for a unanimous court, said, well, how does that help you? Will you be getting a remedy? It doesn't help you at all. It just hurts somebody else. But this case was a little more difficult than your typical case involving differential tax burdens or tax amnesties or parking ticket amnesties, because there is a precedent from 1989 called Allegheny Pittsburgh Coal Company versus Commission of Webster County, where the Supreme Court invalidated a local law, county law, that allowed the tax assessor to determine property tax based on the value of the home when it was last sold. In other words, if your house was sold last in 1970, that price was the basis for your tax assessment. And so your neighbor's house could have been sold in 1990, and that house would be assessed at the 1990 rate. So obviously, the second neighbor would be paying a lot more money. And in that case, the court held, well, this is a widely differential basis for taxes, and the state law and state constitution require equal valuation of equally valuable property. So the plaintiffs argue that this case is directly on point because there is an Indiana law that also requires that, at least primarily, sewer costs have to be apportioned equally among all abutting lands or lots. They say, well, they apportioned it equally, but then they didn't charge everybody, so that's not fair. But the majority rejected that. They said, well, the difference here is that there were some really valid reasons for what the city of Indianapolis did. There were administrative concerns, there were cost concerns, and the law wasn't as clearly stated that things had to be completely uniform in Indianapolis. The dissent, written by Chief Justice Roberts, joined by Justices Scalia and Alito, argued that the difference here is between this and other modern tax cases where the court is very deferential, is that the state law did demand that taxpayers be treated equally. They said, we agree that since the New Deal, we are very deferential to the authorities in these matters, But this is the rare case once every generation or so where a local government just went too far in how it misallocated taxes or unfairly allocated taxes among different residents. I guess a few things we learned from this case is, first of all, Justice Kennedy did join the majority opinion. There's been a lot of talk in various legal circles about whether Justice Kennedy's worldview can be summed up as being essentially libertarian. But this case, as with many other property rights and economic liberty cases, Justice Kennedy is actually to the left of most of his conservative colleagues on the court. So maybe further evidence that Kennedy's reputation as a libertarian is exaggerated. Also, it's interesting that Justice Thomas joined the majority opinion here. Again, he did write the Beach Communications case, which seemed to almost entirely foreclose equal protection challenges to economic legislation or economic regulations, because all you need is a reasonably conceivable set of facts that could provide a rational basis for the classification. It doesn't have to be the actual basis for the classification. It doesn't have to be very conceivable, just reasonably conceivable. And he apparently is sticking to that quite strenuously in this case. The ghost of Lochner seems to be hovering there in a sense that Justice Thomas wanted no part of using the 14th Amendment to review economic legislation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.